Good morning. I hope you're having a fine Sunday morning. Welcome back to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins. I'm here with two friends from a group called Families of Addicts. It is a grassroots organization that is doing its best to do something about heroin addiction in the Miami Valley and the Dayton area. We're here with Lori Arion and Valerie Broadbeck, who are both members and key players in the group. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good.
Happy to hear you. Now, Lori, you are the founder of the group and also executive director now. And Valerie, what's your title with the organization?
Director of Advocacy.
Director of Advocacy. My guess is a lot of people have heard of the group just from reading about, you know, heroin as a problem in the area. But just in case somebody's been living under a rock, tell us about the FOA and how you got started and what you do.
FOA is a support and advocacy group that I started a little over 2 years ago as a result of my own needs from a addiction and recovery standpoint. And we have weekly meetings. And really, I think one of the big things that we do is we try to eliminate the stigma mm-hmm. by being faces and voices, and at the same time helping people learn what others did to get help, to encourage people to you know, kind of learn from what other people did.
Mm-hmm. And so it's an open group. Anybody can drop into these weekly
Anybody.
Meetings?
I mean, families, friends, individuals, people struggling, people in recovery. You could have, you know, a week recovery to 25, 35, 50 years. I mean, it's really for the whole family. We've even had some children start to come because some of them don't have anywhere else to go, and the grandparents or the parents, you know, want to come so badly that they bring them. And honestly, we're not talking about anything that they shouldn't be hearing. So right. Some of them really enjoy it.
So you have kind of a mixture of people who've gone through some form of drug addiction, people who are in recovery, people who are even currently still in addiction, and mm-hmm. then you have families and friends who just want to know how to help and what to do themselves.
Yep.
That's not typical, right? Most groups are not set up that way that I'm familiar with. Is that kind of one of the reasons you've been successful, you think?
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, the family members, they don't have anywhere to go. Mm-hmm. There's really no support for them. Mm-hmm. So to have a place where they can come and talk about what they're going through, because a lot of times what they're going through is their own process. It's just as hard as the person going through addiction. Mm-hmm. So to have a place where they can get ideas on what to do, get support, and know that they're not alone, and to get rid of any shame they may feel, mm-hmm. and then to hear from people in recovery so they get hope, maybe mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. their loved one will get better.
And Laura, you mentioned your own situation. As much as you feel comfortable talking about it, talk about a little bit about what led you to realize that there was a need for this kind of organization.
Basically, what happened was I had my own long-term recovery from alcohol and other drugs that I was, you know, living my own self. And then when I found out that my daughter was shooting heroin, it was really an animal of a completely different color.
I imagine.
And it was a roller coaster ride that was really brutal. And
how did you find out?
I found out I had taken her to urgent care because she was really sick. Mm-hmm. And I saw the needle marks on her arm. And I asked her what they were, and she said that I knew what they were, but I really was shocked. I had no idea. She was terrified of needles, you know, growing up. So I did not even think that that was something she would do. But what happened is from that point forward, like any other parent, we want to help. I mean, that's what parents do.
You're kicking, you know, the parent mode, right?
Yeah. And so, but that was a really big, it was really difficult to find her help. I was getting things like I needed to wait a month, and I was afraid she was going to die.
Was that for like basic treatment?
To get an assessment.
Around here or anywhere?
Around here okay. is where that was. At the time, I had private insurance, which is, I mean, you can get help quicker with that, but it was expensive. It was not real timely. It was very difficult for her to do some of the things they were asking her to do, like stop doing drugs. So, which, you know, that's the problem. So after all of that and the way that the whole process made me feel, mm-hmm. I decided that there was a whole lot of other parents out there that didn't know anything about recovery or addiction at all.
Right.
And were basically living in a prison, not wanting anybody to know, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. know, and not understanding it at all. And so once I started listening to my daughter and really being educated, I wanted to bring that into the support group because she educated me so much on what it was like for her and the things that would really help. You know, this gives a person who has a background in addiction or is currently struggling a place to come say, you know, offer things to the conversation and be heard and respected for it. Right. And I think that that process alone can encourage someone to realize they have value and to seek help as a result of it to make the decision to start the change process. Right.
What do you think, Val?
Yeah, and I think it also plays a big role in people in recovery. I know for me personally, I'm a person in long-term recovery. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I changed my life. I didn't tell anybody about it because of the stigma. And then by coming...
Plus also, too, you wanted to remove yourself from influences that had been in play in your life when you were using.
Right.
Yeah, right.
But so now I had all these good influences in my life, but I didn't feel comfortable telling them about my past.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came to FOA, I realized that I need to speak up and share my message of hope so other people can hear it and know that there is another way. And
do you find it sounds like that was a decision you had to really like a threshold you had to cross that FOA helped you with. Do you find that that's common that people who are in recovery just really don't want to talk about it, pretend it didn't happen, they're embarrassed by it? What comes to play there?
Yeah,
and what changed for you?
I think so, because throughout your addiction, you sent these messages, a lot of them, basically that your life's not worth it. And when people hear that you're in recovery, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, they're going to relapse or, you know, what do we do? And
right,
so
right.
people won't take, you know, in your career, people won't take you professionally, things
right,
like that.
Right.
So trying to change the conversation about it to show like, hey, people recover and they change their life. They give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always like to say that people long-term recovery are an asset and not a liability. So to be able to look at them in that light.
That's interesting. How do you get, I assume that that's kind of a message you'd like the larger society to hear. Talk about that a little bit. An asset, certainly in the short term, in terms of helping society deal with the heroin thing. Is that one of the ways in which you mean? Or
yeah, I mean, I know for me personally, I feel like it's my mission to be a voice for people who aren't being heard. Because I know in my addiction, people wouldn't listen to what I have to say. You know, people are like, oh, they're just a junkie.
Yeah, you're an addict. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so to be able to actually make changes, like people listen to me now, and to be able to help people in that regard.
I think it's really important to know that FOA celebrates recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is not to minimize anyone's tragedy in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
However, like Valerie said, it's really important that people that are having success have a platform to say that.
Right.
And when I first started,
well, it's something to brag about.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Well, and with the stigma, a lot of people, you know, they get better, I'm going to say, and then they go off another direction,
right.
You know, or they stay, you know, really with their small group of friends and nobody ever knows.
Right.
So what happened is initially I was really just starting a support group.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw the Anonymous People trailer.
Talk about that's a film. Yeah. It's a documentary.
Yeah. It's a film called The Anonymous People.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find it on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a movie about the 23 million people in long-term recovery that need to start
23 million?
Yeah, 23
wow.
million
mm-hmm.
people in recovery that aren't saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really added a completely new aspect to FOA to encourage families and people in recovery to have a face and voice and to step out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the annual rallies have come from.
You do those on Courthouse Square, right?
We do them on Courthouse Square, and the first year was excellent. Last year was even better because you guys did publish our picture.
We did. The Dayton Daily News, a nice big picture of how many people? There were a lot of people.
There was about probably 350 people in that picture,
yeah.
But throughout the day, the public officers that were there who can kind of judge crowds better said that there was over 1,000 that moved through the courthouse.
Did you have somebody up at the Meade Tower or something taking a shot down? You had an overhead shot.
Yeah, we have Beaver Creek Rental donates to us.
You had a cherry picker, yeah.
Called a cherry picker, and we had two photographers up there
that
donated their time as well, and they did an awesome job. And so that's what that picture is supposed to be about, is, you know, showing our community, number one, we don't have any secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the amount of people that are being impacted.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is to develop a recovery community that's passionate and compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
to really help us organize our own recovery movement here, basically.
Mm-hmm. And it's an all volunteer organization too, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're doing this all pretty much with the generosity and time donated from. I imagine most of the people that are working with you have some connection to the problem, to to heroin as a, talk about some of the folks that are helping you out with, you told me previously it's like a core group of about 20 people that really are kind of the driving bus behind FOA, but who
we have a couple of families that are really involved, and the family spans what I would call you know, mom, dad, person in recovery, sister. You know, that family in particular really puts in a lot of effort. We have, you know, some other family members in addition to really people in recovery who help us with our outreach. We've been asked, honestly, we get asked all the time to be a resource at events that are out there. Mm-hmm. So that's a really great place for anybody who's involved with FOA to show up and really just tell people there what we do and how we help people, encourage people to come to the meetings. So, but I'd say right now, probably about 25 really committed people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of it's time, you know, it is a commitment.
Well, but you feel like you're getting something out of it, I
presume. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we have a lot of people who are in early recovery and long-term recovery who really say that, you know, it's helped them so much to be able to give back and help and spend their time with us.
No, just to give you an idea, our last meeting last week, I think we counted 57 people, 19 new. Mm-hmm. And and that's, so just to give you an idea of how many people we've been impacting, in 2015 alone, our Dayton location meeting, we had a total weekly meeting attendance of over 2,000 people.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so not until we actually started keeping track and started getting those numbers did we realize how many people we were really impacting, and that doesn't count all the individual people that really contact us because they know that we, you know, have answers on the side. So,
yeah, people call us, email us, wanting help all the time. I mean, there's a need out there.
What typically do you get asked? I mean, if somebody reaches out to one of you, what is the question that they usually have to start the conversation?
What do I do?
Really?
Yeah.
Most of the time, if it's somebody's made the decision, a lot of times somebody's made the decision to get help. Mm-hmm. And they want help right now. So that's when we have to go over that it's a process. But I really do feel that we've networked so much with our community partners that once someone has reached out to get help and has actually made those calls and whatever, we can help, I'd say, kind of get them on the radar a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I'll get family members who call me up crying because they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's when we can help engage them in the group. And even if they can't make it or whatever, just help them on the sidelines as far as helping them understand what it's about and that they're not alone and all of those kinds of things.
Sure, sure. We should tell people what they're listening to. If you're just tuning in, welcome. Good morning and thanks for being here. This is Miami Valley Voices on this Cox station. And we're here with Lori Arion and Valerie Broadbeck from Families of Addicts, a local heroin addiction support group. In the Miami Valley. We should say, too, really quick, Lori, you're from New Carlisle. Valerie, you're from Oakwood. Mm-hmm. Where do the meetings happen?
The meetings
do you
happen.
Do you move them around, or are they mostly one place?
Our Dayton meetings, I think we actually have four meetings right now. So we've got two in Dayton, both at the Life Enrichment Center off of Finley. Mm-hmm. One evening meeting, that is a much larger group. Mm-hmm. Wednesday is 7:30 to 9. And then Tuesday, we are actually one of the Life Enrichment Center's classes during the day from 10 a.m. to 10:40.
Okay.
So that's a much smaller meeting, and it's anybody can come to it. So if you wanted some more one-on-one, that would, you know, I encourage that. However, the Wednesday meeting really shows the culture of FOA and the family atmosphere and really just all the camaraderie that goes on. But in addition to that, we have a meeting in Eaton. Mm-hmm. On Wednesdays, 7:30 to 9.
Why Eaton? I'm curious.
Huh?
Why Eaton? It seems
because one of a guy named Dave lives out that way, and there's a need. There's a huge need out there.
Interesting.
And then another one, a brand new one in Middletown.
Oh, okay.
And we're having our second meeting this Friday.
Okay.
Well, on Fridays,
sure.
We'll say 7:30 to 9.
Do you and are we? Are we we're talking the people that come to you mostly are dealing with heroin addiction or exclusively? Or I assume anybody that needs help, you're helping out.
Yeah, anybody yeah. with any addictions is welcome to come, substance use addictions.
Right.
I get quite asked a lot about alcohol, and mm-hmm. that's fine. Mm-hmm. So there is no corner on the heroin thing. It's just that's what's going
that's
on
the
today.
Thing right now.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yep. So it sounds like it doesn't sound like you're set up. You mentioned AA. It doesn't sound like you're set up with like a 12-step program or something where it's like this is what you do, this is how we do it. Boom, boom, boom. It sounds like far less structured than that. Is that fair? And if so, describe the process,
well,
if there is one.
I'll start by saying that I've never really said that FOA is a recovery group.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. If I said that, I didn't mean to. Yeah.
No, you didn't,
yeah,
right, but right. But I just don't want anybody to be confused. Basically, what my mindset on it is that if somebody is having trouble tapping into the foundational groups that are out there, the 12-step groups, mm-hmm. the faith-based groups, that if they were falling through the cracks, my hope is that FOA would prevent that. Mm-hmm. It is a kind of service work that people in recovery like. Mm-hmm. You know, some mm-hmm. people really like helping back with the families and really help, you know, encouraging people that are struggling and being that peer supporter, basically. Mm-hmm. But one of my hopes is that those people in those groups come to FOA, somebody likes what they've said, and they can spin them back off to their foundational recovery programs that mm-hmm. they're going to.
It's not an either or.
No.
Right, right.
No. Yeah, and yeah, go with the money pathways, things.
And I feel like a lot of people looking for recovery or in recovery, they've had therapy. They've been to treatment, you know, they've had that till they're blue in the face. But what they don't have is a connection for after treatment. They don't have some place to learn how to put their life back on track, mm-hmm. how to make friends, mm-hmm. how to go to school, how to find a hobby, how to find a passion, mm-hmm. How to find hope. And that's what we provide.
You before we turned on the mics, you were talking about that with a term, and I believe you used the word passion building.
Mm-hmm.
Talk
yes.
about that. That seemed like a really big deal, mm-hmm. and something it was a term I'd never heard before in this context, but I kind of intuitively got it.
That's because we made it up.
Well, that's okay. There's nothing like that. That's called branding. Let me help you with that. Yeah. So now that you've branded and trademarked passion building, I'm sure, what is it? What do you mean by it? And how did it apply to your own situation?
Well, my situation, I feel like when I was looking for recovery, you know, I was kind of told, oh, you have to do it this way. You're going to have cravings for the rest of your life. You got to do this and day in and day out. And there was no, I mean, it was almost kind of like, okay, like, why do I want that?
You yeah, know,
I mean,
it doesn't sound fun. Yeah.
No, it didn't. Not at all. And I mean, now my life is absolutely amazing. I couldn't be happier. I have so many hobbies and interests, and I'm finishing up grad school and doing all these things. And that's what's going to keep people clean. I think getting clean, yes, it's very hard, but I think that's the easy part. Mm-hmm. I think staying clean is hard, and you need to have a motivation. You know, mm-hmm. what are you living for?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of the existential thing everybody has, whether yeah. you're an addict or not. Mm-hmm. You know, why are we here? What am I supposed to do?
But the difference between yeah. an addict and someone like you is
I didn't mean to poo-poo what you're saying.
No,
yeah,
no,
right.
not at all.
But what
no.
you're saying is, what you're talking about is normalizing, which is another phrase mm-hmm. that I think you used earlier on, that you're talking about finding, returning yourself to the way you were before you were an addict.
Well, and some people never even had that.
Yeah.
So
oh,
a lot okay. of people, I mean, they never had that. So even the simple thing of learning how to go to the grocery store, mm-hmm. learning how to budget, just very simple things they don't know.
Mm-hmm. And my wife says I still don't know how to do either of those things.
I'm still working on that. Or just throw people out of treatment and expect them to kind of do all this on their own.
Right.
So we're kind of that guidance.
So passion building involves mm-hmm. kind of teaching that, or teaching the value of it, or how do you translate that into something you can give to people?
Providing the opportunity. So we could be like, hey, whoever wants to go kayaking, go check this out. We can go do that. Mm-hmm. Volunteer. I mean, I know we've gone down to Germantown Metro Park and planted trees.
That's
really
cool.
Just kind of, yeah, volunteering, mm-hmm. networking.
Here's kind of where the light bulb went off for me a little bit. I've been attending a lot of nonprofit based
sure.
events.
I've seen you at some of those.
And I heard the lady who started Shoes for Shoeless speak.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that there were so many children in Dayton that didn't have shoes. Mm-hmm. And I never realized the ramifications, what that meant if they didn't have proper fitting shoes. Mm-hmm. Never occurred to me, never thought of it. And I was very moved by what she had started and how she was helping these kids. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if it moved me like that, what if someone in recovery could get moved like that with something that they never knew was going on? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have how many nonprofits and agencies helping people in Dayton? Mm-hmm. So if we could get people in recovery plugged in to a mission that someone's already started, mm-hmm. and have them feel rewarded by it and get passionate about it, mm-hmm. and by like introducing them to different ones, you know, it's not like, you know, your passion has to be my passion, but right. there's a ton to choose from. Mm-hmm. So helping them get connected, mm-hmm. with these agencies, and, you know, maybe somehow we, you know, develop a program, mm-hmm. that's what we're after. Mm-hmm. To where people can go out and really explore what gets them on fire, mm-hmm. and connected. And that brings them back into the mainstream of community,
right.
to, you know, normalize whatever we want to say. But that way I just think it's a way of growing that would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
Connection cool. is, I mean, I hear that over and over with people in recovery. A lot of them, they don't have anyone. It's just them. So I think connection is just such a key point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also, too, it keeps you from thinking about the drugs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned in our talk before mm-hmm. we flipped on the mics that boredom has a big mm-hmm. part of relapse.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit. I'd never really thought about that, but when you said it, it made sense.
Well, when somebody's early in recovery, they're kind of, in those early stages, you're battling your own thoughts. You're battling mm-hmm. your own brain. You're still in that addictive way of thinking, and mm-hmm. it takes time to switch that to a healthy way of thinking. And during that process, if you don't have anything to do and mm-hmm. you're just sitting around, it's very easy for your brain to go back to those negative ways of thoughts and mm-hmm. you to almost talk yourself into a relapse.
Was it hard, in your own case, was it hard to disconnect from friends you'd had before when you were an addict?
Not personally, mm-hmm. no.
But is that often a problem you find with other people you talk with?
Yeah, and I think it's more that it's not necessarily that they have a problem not talking to those people, because in most situations they're not really your friend, but it's the fact that that's all they have,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everyone needs connection. Mm-hmm.
Sure. But I think that's, you know, you took it upon yourself to get involved in other activities, mm-hmm. and I think that right. that was crucial point for you for how you've grown. And I don't think not everybody can do what you did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know that it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can help people do that, you know, it, like I said, it would just move you into a whole new dimension that you didn't know you could do.
Well, it seems sort of like if I'm hearing this right, it seems like the sort of the mantra of the group is, if it's working, keep doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
is that fair?
Yeah.
Is that the way everybody does it, though? I mean, that seems like a pretty, I don't know what happens in treatment, but I'm guessing it's not, if it feels good, do it.
I mean, there's just right? so much controversy yeah. around everything.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
you know, it's been told, you know, that if you're on medication-assisted treatment, that you're not really clean. And, you know, where I brought up, well, if I stop smoking today, you know, and I have a patch on, if I quit smoking.
Right. Or if you're vaping.
I mean, in my mind,
yeah,
I have.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Period. That,
yeah.
You know, if I'm not putting a cigarette in my mouth, I don't care if I have a patch on or not.
Right.
I mean, I've quit smoking. But
that's true, though. The folks who say that the vapor cigarettes are, the e-cigarettes basically are, I'm not smoking. I'm not inhaling anything to my lungs. So why are you picking on me?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's still nicotine in those, and you're still smoking it. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But the point is that, you know, I mean, I think Valerie said it best, you know, earlier, you know, and maybe you can go in about that, about how when people say things like that, it makes a person in recovery feel.
Sure.
Yeah.
yeah.
When people say, oh, well, they're not really clean, they're just substituting one drug for another,
mm-hmm.
Then it makes the person who really is trying, you know, I mean, they are clean, they're doing the program, they're working, mm-hmm. it makes them feel like, oh, well, I guess I'm not clean, I guess I don't. I mean, your self-esteem's
right.
already pretty low
right.
when you get
right.
into recovery.
Right. No, I'd imagine so. What would you tell your younger self, Valerie?
That life recovery is amazing, and that even though getting clean is absolute hell, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the situation? Were you in a treatment program at the time when you did finally something clicked, or?
Yeah, you know? Kind of in and out. I mean, it really, for me, it wasn't, and this is a relapsing disease, so people, mm-hmm. it's all part of a process,
mm-hmm.
and there was no moment of clarity for me. It was just kind of the timing was right, and I just really held on and just kind of pulled through. And there's no easy solution. You can't say, no. Oh, well, this is what I did.
Right. One day on, one day off.
Yeah.
Right. And Lori, you mentioned your daughter early on. You're still working with her, and she's still working through this at some level.
Yeah, she's like Valerie said, it's a process, and so she's had ups and downs throughout the process, and right now,
she's still working through it.
Right now, she's still working through it. She's got legal things that she has to work through, but
you said a really interesting thing earlier on, and that was that she educated you.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting.
She taught me more about the lifestyle, the mindset, what goes through your mind. She goes, she once said to me, I'm not going to parties having fun or anything. I'm just trying to stay well.
Right. Yeah.
There was one time she was taking like a nail class, and she's like, well, I'll paint your nails tonight. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you're going to be high. She said, you don't get it. I didn't. She's fine. She was really just staying well. And, she told, my son and I a lot of stories about the things she would do. And I mean, I don't really mean to minimize it, but it was storytelling, and some of it was funny, the way of that's our April, and I know that's really kind of crazy, but that's some of the fondest times I have, because we did spend time talking to her.
Were listening to her.
Let her know that we were hearing what she was saying, and, conversing with her on it. And, she kind of like led us into her life. And I think that's, helps create so much understanding.
Oh, absolutely. So we got about a minute left. Tell us tell people how they can find you guys. How do you get to FOA?
You can get to FOA we have a webpage, www.foafamilies.org.
Okay.
And there's two different locations on there where you can find our meetings, lots of videos on there that we've put up, and other ways you can see how we're impacting people. You can also join our Facebook page, type in FOA, Families of Addicts, and it'll come right up. And we got about over 4,000 fans on that page.
That's good.
That's the main page. We do, it's an open page on purpose so people can find us.
I presume you're taking donations too?
Yeah, we're taking, you can donate really on the Facebook page or through the website. Not a problem at all.
Cool.
And we've got information all over. Call me, email me. It's all there on the Facebook page or the website.
Fabulous. Thanks for coming in and sharing your story. We'll get you in another couple of months. This is not going to go away, and I want to keep tabs of the group, but I appreciate you guys coming in.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. This has been Miami Valley Voices. We've been here with Lori Arion and Valerie Broadbeck from Families of Addicts, a local group helping fight and advocate for an end to the heroin crisis. Thanks for coming in. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, and tune in next week. We'll be here.